interview with Senator Richard Riley, R-I-L-E-Y, Greenville, South Carolina, December 3rd, 1974.
That work?
What do you think is the impact of the Ravenel campaign, one, and the impact secondarily of the Ravenel disqualification and the events that followed in terms of South Carolina politics, in particular the Democratic Party?
Well, the Ravenel campaign, the campaign radically changed politics in this state, in my opinion. The attitude of the general populace as it pertained to state government, I think, shifted from hardline conservative state government on state issues to a very healthy, above board, progressive attitude. I think that the things that Ravenel talked about were not new issues, but they were articulated or communicated in a way that the public picked it up and tuned in and became part of it. Now, that was a campaign. As to what the prognosis is going to be, that would be hard to say. I think that there has been a significant lash back from that, arising out of the court decision, arising out of the Dorn campaign, which was unsuccessful. I hate to remind you of that. and I think that right now, the so-called Ravenel movement is at a much lower point than it was even at the time of the second reconvening state convention. The results of the court decision were mixed. The feeling was mixed. An awful lot of the real idealists felt like that was just, again, part of the establishment knocking down something that they had come up with. I think the predominant view, though, as I sense it, is that it was a sound decision, and that perhaps it was something that either the Democratic Party or the Ravenel staff or somebody should have gotten checked out better or done something else differently about. I was impressed in examining the Constitution. There's a proviso in the Constitution that says that any registered elector, any qualified elector, can run for any office so long as they're not disqualified as by age, as is set out in the Constitution. And that's under the category of officers. I forget which article, but it's Section 1 under officers. And it was ratified subsequent to the ratification of the article dealing with the executive, which has a 5-year residency provision. So I think really you can find in the Constitution some substantiation for him having been a legal candidate. The Supreme Court, however, ruled on the residency question because that's what was put to them. That's what the earlier judge had ruled on, and it's awful hard to quarrel with the court decision in light of the thin or narrow question that they were given to answer. Because I think if the question was residency, I think they probably ruled right. Now, Jack, it's hard for me to say what the prognosis is for politics in the state. I think the Democratic Party clearly has a new look to it. Whether the new look will be the controlling look, or whether it will just be a viable influence in the party, I don't know. I do think this, that if the Democratic Party organization does not make a meaningful place for the Ravenel people, the young progressives and the old progressives in the Democratic Party of this state, I think there will be either an awful lot of friction within the party, or you're going to have some problem holding everybody together in the party that now considers themselves to be part of the state Democratic Party. I would like to see the Ravenel movement carry on to the point that it would be the dominant force in the state Democratic Party and the dominant force in state politics. I think that, of course, it's not a new position with me. I have been involved in all the reform measures, most of which stemmed out of our efforts to revise the state constitution. I think that the reapportionment had a big role to play in opening up the state government to progressive ideas. I think that revision of the state constitution then broke open the state constitution, and when it did that, it caused us to take a self-analysis of all facets of state government, and take a look at what was being done in all the different areas of state government throughout the country. And this resulted, I think, in a sound look-see on the part of the General Assembly, with influence from without, with the editorials, organizations that don't have an axe to grind, like the League of Women Voters, who are just interested in good government, with public input from the outside. I think the efforts of revising the Constitution have opened up things like home rule, court reform, all the other many reforms that have been debated. Everything, basically, every issue that has been debated in a political sense, which could be interpreted to be a progressive move, I think has been brought to light by opening up the Constitution. And you and I remember not too many years ago that was not done. You didn't question anything that was in the state Constitution up to a certain point. And then all of a sudden it was acceptable to say, well, this was valid in 1895, but it's not valid in 1970. I think the Ravenel movement then came along following the disillusion that was brought about by Watergate, the fact this state was perhaps one of Nixon's strongest states, frustration in government in general. And it's good to see that that the younger generation coming along at this point of frustration could have gone in one of two directions. They could have gone as the movement was in the 60s, except in a much more radical way, or they could take a very sound, mature, democratic approach, and that is attempt to get their power, the power of their vote and their support, into areas and campaigns where change could be made and where they could have input to change the system that they were frustrated in. And I think the wind was blowing. It was blowing in the legislature, but very unsuccessfully. When I think back about, I made what I thought was a very sensible argument in the Senate to make the adjutant general an appointed position. He's the chief staff officer of the National Guard under the governor. The governor is the head of the state militia. And to have him an elected official, you could have a real anti-military person elected, a person that would want the National Guard to be used to hand out lilies. Or you could have a very militaristic person elected. All of that is under the governor, and we're the only state that has an elected adjutant general. I'm using this as an example, a simple one. And my provision was, of course, to have him appointed by the governor. I even had the adjutant general saying that he would not oppose it. And with certain safeguards, I think, because you get into the problem of having a Democratic governor and a Republican House and Senate and so forth, but I think we had advice and consent of the Senate, some safeguard of the legislature in order to get it through. And I think we needed a two-thirds vote to have that as part of the constitutional change. And I think I got six or seven votes out of 46 in the Senate. And that was a result of a very sensible change that no one that yet that I've heard could make any statement as to why it shouldn't be done. And yet you couldn't get the votes in there. With the same way with having the governor, I favored having the governor be able to succeed himself one term. And the governor has a program, and then the program of the governor might be education-minded. And then the people have the opportunity at the end of his term to say whether they like that direction or they don't. And if they like it, it gives him momentum to keep going with the program. But this state, the governor, after 2 years' service, which is all getting his feet wet, in the last 2 years, he's on the way out. And you never do have a state program. And I favor the governor being able to succeed himself. We got just a handful of votes on that. And that's very sensible to me. Well, those things were in the air, and while we weren't getting many votes, and we got beat on a lot of things. Well, in court reform, we were able to get through a pretty good article. We were in home rule, but not as good as we wanted. But those things were being talked about, and as again, they were being editorialized, and it was part of the news, and evidently the young people, or the thinking people, were listening. And in all the frustrations, then when Pug Ravenel came along, and he unabashedly looks the public right in the eye and says, I'm opposed to capital punishment. I'm not opposed to it because of this high-sounding reason, which the young people wouldn't like, or this high-sounding. I'm opposed to it because I don't like it. It's bad, evil. A fresh approach. He takes the same approach on home rule. He was for a pure form of home rule and not home rule with the legislature having a veto power, which is not home rule at all. That's no home rule. And Ravenel says to everybody, whether it's an audience that's pro-home rule or against home rule, he looks them right in the eye and says, I'm for home rule because it's right. It's good from a governmental standpoint. So that's the approach that hit right when it was ripe, I think, for the right person to come along and lay it out. And he did and was extremely effective in it. And he had a lot of guts and he had a lot of courage and he had a lot of ability and a lot of sense. And he had as I've said in a speech to young people, he had the look of the eagle in his eye that the people liked and felt like he was a strong person.
Do you think in 2 years there will be a number of people who will be running for public office because of the Ravenel campaign who otherwise would not have? Is he going to
well, I think if Ravenel,
a different kind of person running?
I don't think there's any question about it. There's a different, all of this group that were not involved heretofore, and they're not Democrats, they're not Republicans, anything else. They were involved in the Democratic campaign with Ravenel. But I think they're all going to be involved now. As far as running, I'm sure involvement means running. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of candidates that otherwise would not have been candidates. A lot of people have called me up that were involved in the Ravenel campaign up here and want to know how they can become more involved, what they can do to keep things going. However, I feel like coming out of the Republican victory in November, that again the Ravenel forces have been taken aback. I think they have suffered another lick, and whether all that's just smoldering in the background, and they'll come out strong again and be just as strong or stronger. Kind of hard to say. I think they're wise to not make a whole lot of moves now and let things calm down. I had a feeling that if Ravenel would have been the governor of this state, that this state would have taken a leadership position in the United States that would be unmatched in state government. Now, that's my feeling. I might be wrong about it, but that's what I felt, and I felt like he would surround himself with these people that are not, they don't have an axe to grind. They're interested in good government for the sake of good government and for providing the services that the government's supposed to provide. And I was really excited about what all could be done. Of course, the way of politics, it doesn't always work out.
What do you think is going to happen with Edwards as governor?
Well, Edwards is a nice fellow. I think he's probably conscientious. I think he's a lot more conservative than he indicates. All of his background has been in party organization. All of his leadership has been, as I understand it, in the party organization. I think the important ingredient in Edwards' service is the person or the persons that he looks to for help. And if he calls in the right people to help him and advise him, then I think he can have a very satisfactory service. If he calls in the wrong people, I think he'll make the wrong decisions. Not that I don't think he has the ability to understand the decisions, but I don't think he has that much background to...
He'd be in a better position in 4 months to make some judgment on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't really tell now, but of course he started putting together his staff. And, but I mean, we'll see that, and I don't know what the reaction of the legislature is going to be on as far as working with the governor. I'm sure they'll probably...
Do you see any prospect of, say, that task force that organized the Dorn campaign continuing to act on any sort of informal basis, perhaps bringing in some other people and providing, in effect, a Democratic alternative program for the state in the next 4 years?
Well, Jack, we've all been kind of getting over the campaign, and I don't think anybody has put a whole lot of thought to an alternative voice. I think if the voice is not one that that we think is the voice that the government ought to be making, certainly another voice will be heard, whether it's that way or some other way. But we've got an awful lot of factions, so to speak, on various issues among Democrats, and it's awful hard to say that that we're gonna, this group or that group is gonna represent the Democratic voice. I was very encouraged by the fact that Congressman Dorn felt, as he told us, and I'm satisfied that's correct because he's an honorable person, that this was the voice that he was going to listen to. And those of us that were interested in the Ravenel movement appreciated that because, in a sense, Brian Dorn might could have gotten more done like that working with the legislature than somebody like Ravenel because of his connections with the old line leadership in the Senate and the House. If he did stay tuned in to the progressives in the House and the Senate.
Considering the closeness of the election, are you among those who feel that if Ravenel had supported Dorn without qualification, that Dorn would have won?
I don't know. I don't guess anybody does. Ravenel went awful far as the campaign built up in his statements in support of Dorn.
But always with qualifications.
Always with qualifications. However, stronger and stronger. Every time I heard him speak, that he would vote, his statement that he would vote for Dorn and his reasons for voting for Dorn were more impressive. And I think that had an effect of kind of building Dorn's campaign up from the outside. Of course, Dorn had his own support all along. And I do feel like it was a tremendous build-up in the Dorn campaign. I really do think that that the time factor was the real dilemma. And perhaps if Ravenel had thrown his whole staff, if he could have, and I don't think he could have, because I think that's the problem he had. I think his staff, I'm not talking about Marvin Chernoff, because I think Marvin Chernoff is a politically astute person, and he wanted to help out the cause. But I think the young idealist staff worker that Ravenel depended on, and the people that really put it on the line for him when he didn't have a chance, I think they were the ones that didn't want him to give a formal endorsement for Brian Dorn, and you just can't criticize a man for that. If he's got if the people, his loyal supporters, say, now we carried you this far, now we don't want you to turn around and do this. It'll be a slap at us. I never have been able to turn around to him and say, well, I think you ought to do this, that, and the other, even in light of that. I would have liked to have seen him come out and endorse Dorn ab initio, which I did.
What does that mean?
From the beginning. But that, I don't know whether that caused his defeat. It might have given him less of a time problem, because one of the main problems he had during the campaign was kind of appealing to the Ravenel people to, you know, to try to get over this. And if Ravenel had come out initially, it might have meant Dorn would have peaked a little bit closer to election time.
Getting back to your own situation, if Ravenel had endorsed your candidacy before the convention began, say the day before, under the circumstances, that would have been about as early as he could have, and thrown his full efforts in support of that candidacy, do you think you'd have won?
Well, Jack, I don't know. It might have been that my candidacy got maximum out of the convention that could have been gleaned out of the convention. If I had, the convention was not a Ravenel convention. However, I'm sure the Ravenel people out in the counties could have had a big effect on the convention members. And if Ravenel had come out for me on Sunday, before the convention on Monday, it would have almost been too late, really, to have his people, his real precinct workers, contacting their delegates to have some effect. I'm sure it would have had some effect. By the same token, it would have probably then put the Dorn people harder to work and cemented a lot of those people before they came to Columbia, and it would have had a lot of conventions, a lot of delegations meeting and voting to let's go all the way one way or the other, and I would have probably been on the short end of that. I think it was the general understanding in the convention after the second ballot that I was Ravenel's preference, simply because of the Ravenel people that he had endorsed. He felt like I had the best chance in the convention. My father, of course, a former state chairman of the Democratic Party, and had a lot of old-line Democratic friends, family-type friends, that would have helped in some areas. For example, I got some votes in Barnwell. In areas like that I think Pug realized that, you know, that in the convention that might have been the best way to go. Alex Sanders would have been absolutely acceptable to him, but he had a hard core of people that would lay down and die for him. But they were a smaller group, kind of. They didn't have the broad appeal that maybe somebody that hadn't been as active in one particular area that I have not. So I don't say that if he had come out earlier it would have made a big difference. I'd have gotten more votes on the first ballot, but I might not have gotten any more on the third.
Are you aware that the South Carolina Senate is the only legislative body in the South that operates on seniority?
I'm aware that we have our use of the seniority is probably as important as any other state, I think, in the whole Union. I think, of course, we have a seniority system up and down the line. And seniority, when you look at the alternatives, seniority for what? As far as serving on committees, of course, I favor a whole reorganization of the whole committee structure and maybe having four or five committees and let everybody serve on one committee. But as far as saying, well, the president of the Senate or the president pro tem will have the committee appointments, or that the committee appointments will be made on seniority basis. I don't have a big quarrel in the seniority method. That puts an awful lot of power in your presiding officer to be able to jockey those committee positions around, and I don't know that that is a good answer to it. I think the answer is equalizing in the committees.
How about the selection of chairman
of the committees? Well, I think probably we discussed that in Columbia the other day, and I think technically we elect chairman now. But it's kind of a perfunctory thing that the senior man is always elected chairman. But I'm not so sure that that's done on seniority. It, in all cases, it is the senior man. But I think we actually go through the exercise of an election. I'm not positive about that. You might take a look at it, but I wouldn't want to say that that's done strictly on seniority, even though it is, for all practical purposes, on seniority. But I don't think that three or four people ought to make all the major decisions in any legislative body. And I think to spread out the representation is very important in our state senate. And frankly, that's very important in state government.
You see any changes in that system in which three or four people do make the decisions as long as you have seniority controlling?
Well, the Senate, of course, serves a four-year term, and we all come up for the election in 1976.